and gentlemen, this is the Above the Bar podcast, a show about a middle-aged father, current events, and how these things affect my everyday life. All righty, folks, we are back at the bar, and it is time to rumble tonight. In this corner, like I said earlier, we got from parts unknown and who really cares, it's your host, Sean, and my tag team partner tonight is Fox Vineyard. We got him back. That's you. And in the other corner from south of who knows where and who cares what's going on, we got the accountant. That's what I'm going to start calling you, Mike. That could be your ring name. The accountant. The accountant. Look at that. You know, he'll go ahead and line your books right up. Big Mike and his partner towering in it. Would you say, Mike, he was like 7'9", something like that?
Close. I'm 5'3", so everybody's a giant to me, so it doesn't matter.
Look, I understand completely. And his partner, Seth Turner, respectively, Mike, you are the treasurer for the International Professional Wrestler. What is it? Vice President. And I kept calling you treasurer before. And Seth, you are the president?
That is correct.
All right. Man. He is the million-dollar man. And as we see, I already got my belt ready to go, prepped and ready to go.
If you're going to wear that belt, you better be ready to defend it. That's
Look,
the rule.
I whoop my 3-year-old's ass every time he tries to take it.
Yeah, smash that kid.
So we got a little bit of housekeeping we got to do before we get going here, folks. First thing, as always, take out your favorite device, whatever you're watching us on, whatever you're listening to us on. Make sure you share the living daylights. Anything that you've got that you enjoy and you love, make sure you share it so much that they ban you from it. That is always the goal here, is share, and share away. The more shares, the more we get this thing banned from all these other sites, and they can't figure out why. I didn't mean to share it to that one. There we go. There's only one I don't share it to. All right, so we keep sharing away, and at the same time as I'm talking, you can see the clock over my shoulder for those of you that are watching live here, and for those of you that are listening on the podcast, we have sticker and a cause. Still doing this. We just added a sticker last week. The Podfather sent us one. If you've got a cause, you got a show, you got a thing, whatever it happens to be that you're into, send me your stickers. Send me a little write-up on it. You can send me a direct message on Facebook or whatever. You can email it to me. Send me a message. I will read your cause. I'll put your sticker on the clock, and then everybody can see it during our show. So remember, sticker and a cause. Then I got one other special kind of thing that just came up. So I've gotten into Instagram since getting into this whole Facebook or this whole podcasting thing that I enjoy, and I met this guy named Lute, L-U-T-E. He lives out in California. He has amazing paintings. So I bought some of Lute's paintings. Let's see if we can get these up in here, how they look. So this is one of Lute's paintings. Pretty badass. It's like werewolves and a condor and like a head. Very, you know what? It reminded me of the Acolytes from the early 2000s. Remember the Acolytes?
How does that remind you? That looks exactly like Ron Simmons.
But what I was thinking is like the Acolytes in the sense like they were always like the whole like darkness and all that stuff. But this guy's a legit painter, like whatever he can get a hold of. The other painting, if I can hold it up so that I can – I thought I might promote him a little bit. The other one, look at this thing. This is on a piece of formica, like a countertop. It weighs like 15 pounds.
That's pretty cool. So,
a little bit of housekeeping there. So – yes, Sherry, the Yankees are winning. They still suck.
Hey, you watch your mouth there, mister. Watch your mouth.
Hey, you listen, don't make me cut a promo on that ass. I'm an O's fan to the heart. So we're going to get into this thing a little bit, but I wanted to have these gentlemen on. As you know, I love wrestling. We needed to have Fox back on. He didn't get to talk as much on the last one because it was all about the flat earth. It was
flat line,
that show was a little flat. Hey Seth, what shape is the earth? You were a teacher, weren't you?
I was a teacher. I'm a school administrator for well over 20 years in New York State, which is exactly and specifically what qualifies me to be the president of the International Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame. And you might be asking yourself, why? What the hell do those two things have in common? And let's go back to your point. The earth is round. Anybody who's got an issue with it hasn't been around the earth to speak to it. So get off your ass, get off your couch, and go see the world. That's what I got.
Thank you.
Now, back to this point. In New York State, a Hall of Fame is considered a museum, and a museum is an educational institution, and it is therefore governed by the New York State Education Department. It is given a constitution, not by any other office in New York State, not by something which would administer business certificates, but rather it is from the New York State Education Department. So we, in December of 2019, after filling out mountains of paperwork, including policies and regulations and meeting standards about what we would do in handling artifacts, we received our charter from the Board of Regents. And so that's what an educator's got to do with this whole thing. Because I was the guy who was, you know, somehow got tricked into this by Mike Lanuto to fill out a whole crap of paperwork, and I happened to write my name on the top of it, and eventually once it got approved, we just stayed with it. And so that's what got us up and off the ground and ready to do business in the state of New York to recognize that's the wild history of professional wrestling. That's what we're all about.
All right, gents, I gotta figure out who it is. Somebody is feeding back. Mike, mute yours for a second. Let's see. And just like that, it was magic. Mike, I think it's you, brother. Yep, that's you, Mike. Whatever you got going on there, you're feeding back to us. It sounds like you have mice running across your speaker.
He's in a drive-thru.
Yeah.
Are you in a drive-thru right now?
I'm in the car.
Don't try to bring your ass up here and try to cut a promo, man. I ain't trying to hear it.
You,
would you jabron like yourself? I'm using every term I can think of today, Fox. Fox, you were supposed to cut a promo as soon as this started. What do you got for me? And that's why you're in a Royal Rumble and not a singles match.
Well, so Sean, what you're referring to there is that we just realized that Fox, who is a professional wrestler in the Capital District area, which is my stomping grounds where I, you know, came up, a Mechanicville Red Raider, by the way, Fox. That's why I've got an issue with you, Water of Elite Cannoneers.
Look out for this guy.
But we realized that Fox is actually in a Royal Rumble, which is being held the weekend and as part of our induction ceremony. So on August 27th, he'll be in Waterloo at the Waterloo League Dome. But so's one of your friends, Sean, someone you're a big fan of, Hands of Stone, Ronnie Garvin, is going to be there.
Is Ronnie Garvin going to be there?
Ronnie Garvin is going to be there. He's one of our guests of honor for the weekend. He'll be with us all weekend.
Dude, I just got chills. I just got chills.
Kevin Sullivan, the Taskmaster himself.
Oh, he's a fan of mine.
And our manager and one of our advisors, good friend JJ Dillon.
Really?
We're just getting started. And I don't know if you have heard yet, it was recently announced that the Rock and Roll Express is going to be part of that whole event. So
did you get like the whole WCW to just show up?
Well, hold on. We got the World's Strongest Man, Mark Henry, will be there for that event.
Sexual chocolate? Hold on. Chocolate.
And a good friend of ours, Tony Atlas. So, and look, it goes, it just continues on. Listen, the list is quite extensive, but yeah, that's what happened, Fox. That's why you got bumped into Royal Rumbles. But you're going to be in there with some.
I defeated Tony Atlas before.
So,
hold on. I will always remember. So I watched a documentary. It's probably 20-year-old documentary with Tony Atlas in it. Yep. So he's And he was an older gentleman then. He's got to be in his 70s. Got to be.
Late 60s, anyway, but go ahead.
And it was him doing shoot matches against, like, women and stuff like that.
They'll walk on his face for $100.
You tell Tony.
Yeah. He'll do it for free.
Tony when you're there on
true, he loves it.
To his face.
What? Tell him what?
No, go wrestling old ladies.
No, it's true. If you go find this documentary, Mike, he was doing like National Guards and stuff like that, and he was doing shoot matches, which is where they're actually blasting each other and not pulling their punches as much. But he was doing shoot matches against women. Fox, I know you blast me.
What Fox is saying and what Mike is saying, Tony Atlas is still jacked, legitimately. Oh, yeah. The biggest arms out there. It's unreal.
I can't wait. Like, this is, look, folks, August 28th is the inaugural ball in Albany. Is it going down at the Desmond, the ball?
So the event, yep. So we start first Friday night at the Water of Elite Dome, where we have a live wrestling event filled with all sorts of legends and stars.
And locals.
And locals, and by the way, that's because the Capital District is so significant in the history of professional wrestling, and so
that's why
we need to own it. We'll come full circle with that. So Saturday we're then having a pro wrestling convention. So that's where people will have vendors, we'll have people signing autographs. That's open for the general public. So if you want to stop in, make a donation to the Hall of Fame, and go around, you can, you know, again, get autographs of wrestlers. You can buy books. You can buy, you know, historical artifacts that people might be selling. So, you know, it'll be a great convention. If you want to dress up like your favorite pro wrestler, you know, what we're looking to do is create at the Desmond, you know, a real wrestling convention that will eventually take over sort of like a Comic-Con. So then as we go in the afternoon, we're going to be having panel discussions, and that's where we're going to be rolling our video cameras and capturing the history as we ask, you know, some of these attendees that I already ran down the list. And this is an idea I stole from some things they do down in Florida. We've got some friends in Florida who've run some conventions for wrestling from Florida. And I saw how they were running some panel discussions, and we're going to do that. So that's available for people. And then that night we're going to be doing our induction ceremonies. That's a formal event. I forgot to mention, on Friday night after the live pro wrestling, we're having Bill Apter running an after hours party. And so Bill Apter, for
after
whom
hours.
After the live wrestling event in Water of Elite, you come on back to the Desmond. We're going to have a nice top shelf event where Bill Apter is going to be telling stories, doing comedy, doing you know, what it is that Bill Apter does. So
that's awesome. Listen, like, I can't wait, and I will volunteer my services.
Well, we end then Sunday morning with a breakfast of champions. So that's where everybody can kind of wrap up the weekend, get together. We pass around the microphone and people tell their stories from the road, et cetera. So that's it up.
Awesome.
And then that's Travers Weekend in Saratoga. So if you want to go,
oh, is it Travers?
Head right up to Saratoga. So that's on your own though. That's what we got in the
Rock and Roll Express last year, and then Kabad took it from me.
Was that going to be?
I can tell you right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So yep, we were in line to be part of all of that stuff. So
I would have beat them, and I would have been on to glory.
Just like that.
I don't know. I've watched them land a Canadian destroyer, you know, in their 60s. So
that's true.
So Mike, how'd you get involved in all this? Mike, and he's frozen.
Okay,
can you hear us, Mike? Unmute it, Mike. Unmute.
Subtitles.
Yeah, I'm having technical difficulties.
No, we got you now. Go with it, Mike.
We're having a major thunderstorm down where I am.
Wait a sec. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on, Mike. You're having a major thunderstorm as you're sitting in your car and your kid's playing soccer? Hold on. Oh, it's so great.
I know. It's hard to believe, right? My wife's going to kill me. She's out in the middle of the storm. So. So I came about all this inadvertently back in 2018. I was on a set of a movie filming in Newburgh and outside of Middletown. And I came across this guy named Tony Villano. We had struck up this, you know, conversations. The guy, you know, we're there all day on set. The guy, you know, he would tell some incredible stories, had everybody there laughing their asses off, right? So we strike up this friendship, and over the next couple months or so, you know, we meet for lunch a couple times, and he starts telling me about how, you know, he founded the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame that was in Amsterdam, New York. And, you know, for whatever circumstances that he had, he turned it over to a group down in Texas. And, you know, but it would, you know, museums and Hall of Fames belong in New York because we have the most museums and Hall of Fames per capita in the country. I'm like, all right, you know.
I didn't know that.
You know, it's interesting. So, you know, yeah. So we're, you know, continuing, you know, having these lunches and stuff. So 4th of July of 2019, I see Seth post something on Facebook, you know, with Hulk Hogan or whatever. And, you know, hey, happy 4th of July or whatever. So I tagged Tony Villano in this message, like, hey, you know, check this out. So Seth then hits me up and is like, hey, how do you know him? So I tell the story, you know, we met on a movie set or whatever. He's like, well, I went to the Hall of Fame back when it was in Amsterdam and met him also. And through other people that he met up there, Seth has his own story that he can tell about that. So I tell him, I was like, all right, well, do you want to meet this guy? You know, he wants to talk about potentially having another Hall of Fame back here in New York. Sure. So we meet for breakfast one morning in early July in my hometown in Catskill, have this conversation, and pretty much like, all right, Tony's like, if you guys are serious, I'll guide you through how to set this up. So we're like, all right, well, let's hear talk about it. So he's like, all right, so, you know, obviously, we can't use the name Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame because it's what he already has down in Texas. So we start collaborating, and we're like, all right, well, let's expand it to not just national, but, you know, the international wrestling community had huge contributions to the whole industry.
Oh, yeah.
So why not International Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame? And boom, the light bulb clicked. We're like, you know, pro wrestling is one of the largest exports that the United States has, this multi-billion-dollar industry. And there's so many people around the world that are, you know, fans of the industry. Why not make it international? And, you know, the rest is history.
That's so awesome. You know, I'm just thinking about it. When you say international, I think about, obviously, the chance to get and meet rugged Ronnie Garvin, Hands of Stone, you know, probably to me when I was a kid, and I mentioned this before, that his finishing move. So those of you who don't know, Ronnie Garvin, he had two finishing moves. One is considered as one of the top four worst finishing moves ever, which is the Garvin Stomp, which is he just bounced around you and stomped on you. And the other one was the fist. What's that?
Randy Orton uses it.
But it's still considered, like, if you look at like some of the best and worst, it's considered that. But when he used to do just a straight up straight punch and knock dudes out as a kid, that was so cool. I was like, yeah, he would just rock dudes. That was so great. But when you talk international, Mike, I'll tell you who one of my other favorite wrestlers as a kid, and I didn't get to post him, was Ivan Polanski, the Polish powerhouse. Do you remember him? He was the original world's strongest man.
Ivan Putski.
Was it Putski?
Yes.
But he was the Polish powerhouse.
He's still going, yes, of course.
Is he still around?
Yeah, he also trained the Harlem Heat. It's Ivan Putski. Yes.
He was a massive human being. Now, you know what's funny, Seth, now when you talk about this? So who was the guy, and any one of you who remembers, he was the original, and I posted this picture, it's funny enough, he was, who was the Russian guy who used to do the Russian sickle? Ivan.
A Russian sickle?
Nikolai Volkov?
Nikolai Volkov. Nikolai Volkov and his uncle was the original Russian bad guy. I can't think of his name.
Oh, no, you're thinking Ivan Koloff and
Koloff. Nikolai Koloff and Ivan Koloff.
Nikolai Volkov. And okay. So it's Ivan Koloff and his nephew,
Nikolai. So
then there was Nikita.
Ivan Koloff. And Nikita. Ivan and Nikita. Koloff. Pardon me. That's it. Nikita Koloff.
Now, look at that. Smart guy, knows his stuff. Well, what's funny is I met the uncle once selling tapes in a this is the other side to some of these different wrestlers here that have been around. I met the uncle in a Walmart in Jacksonville, North Carolina, selling cassette tapes of him like preaching or something like that. And
Well, let me speak to Ivan Koloff. Did become a minister, and that's what well known. By the way, I'm seeing Jeanette is writing about giant haystacks and Big Daddy from the UK. And so we have some of our contributors, and the way that we went about our ballots and our voting, we involve we have a ballot committee that represents people from across the world. Best people with that is Jimmy Wheeler, who's in the UK. So when I see, I would just want you to know, we really do work and strive to have international flavor from when we create our ballot to the voting that we have on. But anyway, let me just add. So Mike ended up setting up a breakfast with myself and Tony Villano it was July 2019. And so the three of us sat there having breakfast in Catskill in a diner, and they float this idea. And what happens is my family goes away for a couple weeks during the summer, but I still have to work. So I didn't have anything to do after work. So I start investigating, how do we do this? What type of paperwork needs to get filed? And they sort of trick you, because it starts with a 3-page application. And I thought I could do that. And then at the end, they say, no, wait, you've got to file another 6-page document. And then that 6-page document leads to 10 policies that you have to have in place. So, 6 weeks of really intense paperwork, and that's what had to get filed. And you had to find out, is the name available? So you got to go through all of this rigmarole. But let me go back. You were talking about Ivan Koloff, and we talked about Tony Atlas. And so I'll go back. I grew up in the Capital District area. I became a teacher of special education. I worked as a school administrator. Believe it or not, as being an elementary principal, though, my paths eventually crossed with Mick Foley. Why Mick Foley? Cactus Jack. He's a native New Yorker. He went to SUNY Cortland. He went to Cortland along with one of the teachers who was in my building, who happened to be very good friends with Cactus Jack. So Cactus Jack comes to my school. He MCs for a dodgeball tournament we were doing as a fundraiser. So there was Cactus and his son Dewey, got to know him through that capacity. A few years later, Mick's now going into the WWE Hall of Fame. He gets us media ticket rights to go down to WrestleMania Access, and we went down as an elementary school with a bunch of little kids to go shoot interviews and stuff. Yeah, it was really cool. So we decide we want to do some videos for Mick to recognize him, because he did us a favor. We want to do him a favor. So I find out that Dominic DiNucci is going to be at the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame in Amsterdam, New York. We make a trip out to Amsterdam, New York, specifically just to find Dominic DiNucci.
Now, who's Dominic DiNucci?
Dominic DiNucci trained Mick Foley. Dominic DiNucci's best friends with Bruno Sammartino. Dominic is still alive, 90 years old, a wrestling legend, more so in New Zealand, Australia, and Europe, but certainly was well accomplished in New York and was in classic WWF during their growth. So he's Bruno. He was Bruno's right hand and still is. Dominic's 90 years old. He will be with us. Dominic trained Cactus Jack, Mick Foley, guys like Well, anyway, lots of other people, but I'll go back to that. It'll come to me as I'm going. The guy from ECW, Dean.
Dean Ambrose?
No, not Dean Ambrose. But Dean Ambrose becomes part of this, by the way. When I went down to WrestleMania, I interviewed The Shield back in 2013, I think, when Mick was getting in. So it's one of the first interviews with The Shield, and I shot it because we happened to be there with those media rights, and no one knew who they were, but I did. And so that's at 350 or 400,000 views at this point, and we had no Holy business crap. Being there. Okay, so we go to Amsterdam. I pull in. There's Jimmy Superfly Snuka outside smoking cigarettes. Say hi to Superfly. I can't believe this is going on. I walk in. There's Paul Orndorff. There's Cowboy Bill Watts. There's the Assassins. I walk into the convention they've got going on, and there's George the Animal Steel. There's Tito Santana. And there was the Destroyer. Who is just awesome, just awesome. And then Leapin' Lanny Poffo's talking to me, and I'm like having like this experience. So I can't believe it. These guys are so accessible. So when they found out that the Hall of Fame had left Amsterdam, I was upset. But I had a different experience, though. Let me say this. So it's all related back to Mick Foley and trying to shoot this video for him. I signed up for, back in this era, you signed up for a mailing list. They didn't maybe email, but they really mailed you things at that time. So I get a flyer that's advertising Rocky Johnson's going to be doing a signing in Amsterdam. And I decided I'm going to go, I want to get Rocky Johnson to contribute to this video that we're shooting, trying to put together something for Mick. I go out, I get a chance, I interview Rocky Johnson. He leaves, goes back to Florida and searches me out. He has his wife call me up and he says, I like that interview you did so much. I want you to come down to Florida. I said, what are you talking about? He goes, yeah, my son just bought me a new house. I want you to come down. We're moving in. Come on down, and we're going to do more interviews. So that started this relationship.
That's Dwayne the Rock Johnson's father, for those who don't realize that. Rocky Johnson is Dwayne son. The Rock Johnson. Yep, his son.
Never heard of
him. Yep. But so, fuck him.
So,
I mean, hey.
I start flying down every couple months down to Florida, going into this gated community. And I go in and I was hanging out with Rocky Johnson, shooting videos, working out with him, getting to know him. We then would go to some events in New Jersey and that's where I would be with Ivan Koloff and Tony Atlas, and listening to Tony Atlas tell the stories of Bruiser Brody's murder. And you're sitting there listening to people talk about the death of David Von Erich and from people who were right there and knew the firsthand. Not being told to the media, not being told for, shoot interviews. So then we're at events in Toronto for Sweet Daddy Siki, who is a classic, great, great pro wrestler. But if you don't know him, he also trained Edge and Christian and lots of other wrestlers. And so Sweet Daddy, who's also still going at 90 something years old. I'd like to say we could get him, but he probably doesn't want to cross the border and deal with that whole hassle. So, but I would get taken around. Imagine when you're taken under the wing of Rocky Johnson, you get to meet everybody, come in through that entrance, get smartened up to the business in that capacity, and the doors that opened. So Rocky was actually on our board. We had named him. We got our charter on December 10th, and on December 15th, we had him appointed to our board. We announced it. And unfortunately, 1 month later, he passed away, suddenly. And so that was unfortunate. But Rocky was on our board. That's sort of, again, I've got maybe no business being in professional wrestling, but that's my story, and my thing is I just go about doing what I do. I don't pretend to be something I'm not. I will let you know who I am and what I do. But then what our talent is, Mike, having great financial acumen and being a go-getter, and myself, who has experience chartering these education issues and knowing how to do strategic planning and keeping us on track and, coordinating and collaborating and getting groups of people to accomplish things. So those are the skills that are transferable, and that's what I think will make our endeavor successful, because you need you don't need a pro wrestler to run a museum. Okay, that's a value added, but you need someone who's got good business acumen, good financial acumen, you know, can knows how to take care of things. So that when someone makes a donation, you have to spell out in advance what would happen in the event that the organization ceases to exist. What would you do with that artifact? So that has to be thought of. These things have to be articulated and maintained in files in advance. Who would you call if you happen to get damage on something, be it, you know, whatever might cause it? Do you have specialists in place for paper or for cloth or for different metals and things like that? So you have to have a list of specialists for these things. So that's all not yet, but we're looking. So Fox, any help along that? We were about to sign some contracts for a building last year. COVID hit, and we backed right out. We didn't, you know, our financial margin's not great. You know, we're a startup non-for-profit, and luckily we didn't.
What about the building it used to be in?
So that's in that was in Amsterdam.
Yeah, it's right off the highway.
Yeah. I mean, those, you know, but the potential.
I don't know what's there now, but
the bulk of our guys right now, though, are in the Albany area. You know, from Albany to Kingston. So, if we were to do something like that, and we have people in Utica who are interested as well. So we've got people in Utica, people in Catskill where Mike is, people in Albany area. I'm in conversation with the people from Mechanicville, of course, where I'm from too. So we're looking at any of those opportunities. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, to jump in real quick. No, we're open to ideas, right? I mean, so yeah, the main goal is to have a physical location, right? That would be the epicenter, the hub of the international wrestling community. So there are Hall of Fames around the world. And the goal is to, at one point, whether it's an annual or, you know, every 2 years, having a convention where these Hall of Fames from around the world come to the Central International Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame here in New York. One, to celebrate all the contributions to the industry, and two, to help, you know, bring economic growth to that community that is housing the actual physical museum. So there's a lot of working factors involved in this, and it's not just, oh, let's just get a location and we'll throw some artifacts in it. No, there's a huge plan behind the scenes. So finding the right municipality, the right city, the right building is key. It's not just, let's just get any location and just open up a spot. So again,
in the New York State Museum. Get it. They've been there. Yeah. They stopped bringing dinosaurs in, so I don't care about anything. Yeah.
Right. So we're open to having that discussion with people that might know the location. You know, we're not going to shoot down any ideas. We're open to that conversation.
I didn't know this.
Present a proposal, you know, and we can discuss it.
Yep. So we will pursue it vigorously, by the way, as soon as we have any opportunities or concepts, and we do that. But as you can imagine, over the last couple months, things are very different than they were in November and December. So, you know, we almost targeted to not even, you know, now we're paying attention to real estate, but, you know, we knew, don't do anything before maybe May or June, July. Don't be in a rush with this, because we didn't know what the status of the virus would be, you know, whether we could even have people are coming. But we also know we need that physical location, because people need that central hub. And we have donors who want to really contribute really awesome artifacts. And so we need to have a place for that to go.
Now, is there anyone? So I didn't realize there wasn't a physical location right now. I thought that there was, and I thought it was down in the Catskill area in Coxsackie or something like that. I don't know where I got that from. I make shit up all the time. That's why I have my own show.
That's the mailing address right now. So that's where
That's probably why I thought that then. But so has anyone reached out to you? And Fox, what are you going to donate other than a picture of yourself to the museum? Has anyone reached out with an item where you're like, like I saw, if I saw it right, you have Bruno Sammartino's belt, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any other items where you're like, hold on, you have blank, and you're like, this is going to be our centerpiece, or like this is something that even at coming up on August 28th at the inaugural ball and everything else, this is like an item you want to show everyone to be like, you're biting. So y'all aren't watching the live video. Seth, you can tell, is a pretty good size old boy. I ain't scared. Put a pop knot on that ass. He's a pretty good size old boy. And he is biting his lip right now because he has got something that he needs to tell us he's got. What do you got there, Seth?
Oh, I don't know that I don't know what – I don't know that I'm telling you anything.
Come on.
If somebody wants to know – someone wants to know, they need to go, you know, and be there in August. But let's go back to, you brought up having Bruno Sammartino's championship belt. And yeah. That's why I've got this little statue here of Bruno. It's I don't have the belt. I don't have the belt with me tonight. But let me just say, I've been in regular contact with Bruno's son, Daryl, who is going to be helping to enhance our Bruno Sammartino collection. Let me just put it that way, and I won't say anything more specific because until you have it in hand, you don't have anything. But
right.
He and I have been in pretty regular contact. And that happened because as soon as we acquired the belt, I heard from some trolls who wanted to question the authenticity, et cetera, and which – it's great when, you know, when Bruno Sammartino tells you it is what it is, but someone else who was never there, right, wasn't born, wasn't alive, and never saw it in person tells you it wasn't. So but I started to get freaked out a little bit. And then all of a sudden I get a text message and it's from a different name, but it says, you know, this is Daryl Sammartino. Would you give me a call? I call him up. Daryl says, look, I saw what these people are saying, that I'm letting you know that's authentic. That's what my dad's had for 50 years. And then he said, in fact, I'm going to give you a few other things. And we talked about what those things are. So we're going to put together some pretty cool stuff. One thing I'll share with you, I called him up one day and I said, you know, something told me to ask you for this. I said, do you still have the weight set your dad used? And he said, yeah, I got it down in the basement. I said, what do you think of that for the museum? And so that'd be a good thing. So imagine if we set up Bruno's original weight bench, you know, so that's what one of those things. But that's not I got something, you know, I love that now there's a WWE show about tracking down artifacts, but this is something
that you saw that.
Yeah. And I won't speak to it because I don't have it in hand yet, but something on par with Bruno's belt. Let me just put it that way. Something on par that nobody else is paying attention to. And I love that no one's paying attention to it. So we go out and we actively search for things. Now, Sean, back to your point, though, I've also been contacted by some really well-esteemed historians who are getting a little bit older too, who have let us know that they want for their personal collections, which are chock full of, you know, just priceless artifacts, posters, pictures, you know, things from wrestlers, you know, of decades ago. So we do have, you know, those who are looking to contribute. That's why I know once we have the building, we're going to fill it up. But I'm going to go back. Bruno's belt, you don't beat that. I mean, in any conversation, anybody can talk about whatever they – that's my opinion. Bruno Sammartino held the world championship for 14 years in total. He was the man's man, and he did it at a time when, you know, he built the WWE.
Yeah.
It wouldn't exist, and potentially pro wrestling may not have survived or thrived. I mean, no one can tell specifically, but what we can do is give credit to where it's due. He's the guy who built pro wrestling in New York City, which is where the magazines were, which kept publishing and kept the magazine industry going around pro wrestling. So, and Bruno's the man, period. And
he has a rap album like Macho Man.
About a year ago, I'd gotten tipped off that his some of artifacts from his personal estate were going to an auction. I kept my mouth shut. I didn't tell anybody what I was doing because I didn't want to tip anyone off. I wanted to do my research, make sure it was what I thought it was. Cause again, I'm not, you know, I wasn't there.
Right.
And it's difficult because in that era they filmed wrestling and then would film over it the next week, you know, or tape over it. So they reused the tape. So the matches were by and large erased. So there's not a lot of evidence from that era that exists. You know, you got some photographs, but anyway, you know, yeah, we got to track it down. We got Bruno's belt. And with that, it helped to open lots of doors for lots of other opportunities and conversations. And so it's pretty cool.
Now, Fox, I got to ask you, Fox, come back. He's like his name is Fox, but he's a fucking squirrel. God.
It's too cold in here.
All right. So I got to ask. So you're 30 what? How old are you, Fox?
35.
Okay, so you're definitely, I know I'm 44, Seth, you are?
48.
So I'd say Seth and I probably watched similar wrestlers of the time, and then you would have been, had a different group. Now, my beautiful painting, just so you folks know, I'm going to beat my cat here in a second. Get off the painting, you asshole. God, get off.
It's worth more now.
Yeah, it's got cat ass on it. But who was – now, Fox knows this. I work with somebody that grew up with Fox. My son's best friend in daycare's mom grew up with Fox. Who was your influence, Fox? Is you hearing us – huh? What? See?
Whose mom grew up with me?
Lisa.
Oh.
That's how we met.
By the way, it was Shane Douglas from ECW that got trained by –
squirrel
by Dominic DiNucci. It was Shane Douglas from ECW. He and Cactus Jack were in the same training group. Sorry, finally came.
But Fox, who was it for you? Out of, like, you know, you hear us talking about guys that haven't laced up in decades. Who was it for you that got you to say, "Hey, this is where I want to be. This is, you know, my goal is to hit the show."
That was me. I saw myself. Man, who I liked the most growing up, Brett and Hogan.
Like, Brett the Hitman?
Is there another Brett that you know of in
I love
Brett most Stevens would say, Subway?
Yes, I like Brett. He's a fucking nice guy.
Idiot. Remember, I'd always wear my sweatpants, and I put, like, my father worked at a steel mill, and he had, like, really, like, big giant tube socks. I put them shits on his Bret Hart's boots, leather jacket, and I walked down my hallway hitting doorknobs. Like, yeah. And then, of course, Hogan, because it's fucking Hogan.
Right.
Who's the best seller?
Now, were either one of you – this is a great Hogan question. When you saw Hogan go black – go to the NWA with the – was it black mustache? What did he have? Was it the goatee that was black?
He had the beard black. He had the mustache.
The beard black. That was it. When you saw Hogan go and become a bad guy and become a heel, for those you don't know, heel is a bad guy in wrestling, and become a heel, were you like, this is a bunch of shit, I'm done with this, or did you dig it?
I didn't have cable until like 97. I got it the weekend, the Royal Rumble 97. I remember because I taped that shit and I watched it every single day, every masked wrestler and Latin lover that was in that thing, every Jerry Lawler thing, I have it on tape. But my friends, I went to his house and he had the WCW Hogan, like the rubber one that was, and he colored it black. And I said, "What are you doing to the Hulkster?" And he was like, "Don't you know he's bad?" And I was like, "No."
All right, guys.
And then and everything. And then Hollywood Hogan is the coolest fucking wrestler ever.
Let me know when you're ready to be taken to school, gentlemen.
Hold on. All right, Seth's got now. If Seth, now see, Seth, are you going to go back to the original Hogan, where he was kind of a heel?
I'll go back to when he was Terry Bollea playing bass at a bar in Tampa when he wanted to get trained in Hiro Matsuda, broke his leg. Because Eddie Graham didn't want hippies coming into pro wrestling at that time. then when Hogan kept coming back, And they said, all right, let's train him. But he kept coming. And then he goes to Memphis where he's Terry Bolder. And then he gets, then they're shooting something, a morning show where they've got Lou Ferrigno on there. And they turn and say, well, you're bigger than him. He said, yeah, I'm the Hulk. And so he becomes Hulk and they want to, but it's, then he comes to New York and they want him to be Hulk Hogan, give him an Irish name. But he's a bad guy and he's got classy Freddie Blassie as his manager and he's shaving a heart into his chest. They want him to get a little bit better. So they send him out to the AWA. That's where he's working. And, but then Vince McMahon Sr. does not want him to go shoot Rocky III. And they're pissed at him. They don't want him to be in that movie. They think it's going to kill the business or whatever they thought. Who knows? They didn't want him. So they're pissed when he does it. But either way, he does it. Now Vince McMahon Jr. takes over, brings back Hogan when he's trying to go national. Hogan now is Hulkamania as we know it, thanks to the Iron Sheik, by the way.
Yes.
Because if you don't have the Iron Sheik, what do you got? You had Bob Backlund as your champion. Great, you know, Bob, great wrestler, but vanilla. But it's that Hogan beat this Iron Sheik, this guy waving a flag, you know, who's you know, making everybody go absolutely crazy. So that's Hogan, Hulkamania. It's 84. It's awesome. 84, 85, 86. It's getting a little old, but he keeps fighting. He keeps using his contractual language. He keeps getting over. He slams Andre. He's good. It's going. It's good, but Macho's better maybe, or maybe the Ultimate Warrior maybe. Who knows? So it's drying up a little. Then, you know, then WWF's going to this stuff with Doink the Clown and, you know,
I like Doink.
Cartoonish. Fine, it's good. Doink will be with us too. It's all good. I'm saying it's all, I'm just
wait, did you say you got history. Doink also?
I'm not saying, I mean, he should be there. It's a pretty good chance.
The original Doink,
there were three of them.
Was there three?
There was about 55 of them. Anyone can put the Doink shit on and be like, I'm Doink.
So when Hogan goes to WCW and it's the NWO, it was friggin' awesome. It needed to be done. Hulkamania, for as great as it was, you gotta pull that switch. It's pro wrestling we're talking about here. It's pro. It was the NWO. It was the Monday Night Wars. ECW is on the WSBK in Boston, and you're watching that at 1 a.m. And you're getting up on Monday, and you're videotaping one wrestling and trying to watch the other, and you're flipping back and forth to see which one's better. And all of a sudden, you got the NWO coming around. You know, and you know, there's Big Daddy Diesel and Razor Ramon, and you're saying, what the hell is going on here? And you know, it was awesome. It was a great time in wrestling. It was pre-Attitude Era, and then it ushered in the Attitude Era. So you got to remember where we were at that time. And so that's the history. That's welcome.
I used to call the time zone.
You had to get a set of applause there, Seth. No, it was a set of applause. Seth needed applause. He just cut a promo on both of us. We're both done now. I mean,
know about that. Now you wonder why I'm doing what I'm doing.
I love it, brother. I mean,
savant ability for meaningless, trivial information that won't do it. Good for anything else but this.
Good bar trivia. For those of you that are still out there listening and watching, please, if you got questions, tell me who your favorite wrestler was. Tell me what your favorite wrestling moment was. I know one that, you know, where I can remember where somebody finally had to tell me, hey, young man, wrestling isn't real. There's a script involved in this.
I didn't say that.
I said there's a script involved. And what? For me,
I don't know what you're talking about, Sean, but well, I'm
going to tell you.
Oh, he's talking about a script, like, because I'm an actor now and stuff, too. That's
awesome. Oh, God.
Can you fake gravity, Sean? Can you fake gravity?
Listen to me. Did I use the F word? Did I use the F word?
You said something wasn't real. You used an R word.
I said the first time somebody had to tell me it wasn't scripted. Show, and that was when Ricky Fox, the Dragon.
What is he talking? What is Fox?
Oh
what
my
is
God!
This guy talking about?
Fox. There's no script here. 100% real.
Fox, I'm going to recognize, recommend that your friend, that you run an intervention right now because he's down a dangerous path, and I'll invite some friends like Tonga to come talk with you.
Okay, Tonga, that's a great one right there.
So I got a Ming story from a bar.
Let me finish my story.
Go ahead.
Which was probably one of the best storylines that just when I saw wrestling change was Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and Macho Man Randy Savage when he hit him with the bell and supposedly broke his throat. He couldn't talk. Great. He was in rehab. And it so blew my mind because this is also the first time I saw wrestling where it wasn't all in the ring. They would have like Ricky the Dragon was like in rehab and Macho Man would be in full garb and go after while he's in rehab.
Sean, let Fox know, what did you do when you saw that cobra from Jake the Snake bite Macho Man and they were X-ing it out? I mean, you want to talk about a seminal moment on TV.
Oh, yeah. And then there were some other ones. I got to tell you funny, though, is do you remember when Elizabeth had Macho Man? And then do you remember Woman?
Of course, yeah.
And she had
Brad rest her soul.
And she had a wrestler with her. Now, this is the first time I ever experienced this. I have an uncle passed away many, many moons ago. He's about 6'4", 6'5", pushed anywhere between 350 to 400 pounds. And he went to go see one of those matches. And it was the first time where he was like, they a little bit over exaggerated this guy. So whoever it was that Woman managed at the time, that was supposed to be her bodyguard, they were like, coming to the ring, weighing in at 300 pounds, 6'8", and whatever the hell his name was. And my uncle's like, I looked down at the guy, and he was 6'4".
You know, let me interject right now, too.
Please interject.
Your uncle was fine. There may have been embellishment, et cetera, but let me explain catch-as-catch-can wrestling and the training that these guys have. So you might want to use that F word or speak about something not being
I didn't use – look, real. I never used the word.
Well, let me break it down and go back. I'll go back to Wigan in England where there was a convergence in the late 1800s of the British Navy bringing back wrestling techniques and shooting techniques from all across the world. And these guys got trained in joint manipulation and locks and in doing maneuvers that are so dangerous and so deadly that you might look at that guy and think he's little and he can't do a thing. And that guy will have you twisted into positions that you don't know you can be twisted in. You know, trained by guys like Billy Robinson or Carl Gotch and just some classic shooter. There's shooters. You got catch wrestlers. So when you
explain hear about the difference because I know what a shoot is.
Stu What's Hart and what they would do in the dungeon. And so you know, Fox, you were a Bret Hart fan. And let me speak to this because and it actually there was just an article today of Bret speaking about. And I will speak to this: the Hart family and the Johnson Maivia family are very close, and that goes back decades. That goes back to when Rocky was training in the 60s, and Frank Tunney sent Rocky out to Calgary to get trained with Stu Hart. This is 1965. They're all over the Western. Stu Hart's taking care of Rocky Johnson, but twisting him into all – puts him in a chokehold so bad that it bursts the blood vessel in Rocky's eye, okay? But they go back to that era. Now, when Dwayne gets into the business, and this was just in the news, Bret talking about it, and so I can verify, I've heard similar stories from in the family about other wrestlers who maybe weren't nice to Dwayne, but Bret Hart and the Hart family and the Johnson family always looked out for each other, always took care of each other. So they've got a respect that goes on going all the way back to the 60s.
Well, tell people what the difference between shoot and catch is. Or Fox, why don't you do it?
Well,
I don't know much about catch. I know like shoot is like Greco-Roman and like catch is like chaining.
Catch is I'm going to take whatever you give me and I'm going to break it. If you give me your fingers, I'll break it. If you give me your arm, I'll break it. I'm going to catch whatever you give me. That's what I'm going to take. So shoot, you're shooting in, catch, you're staying back and twisting them. And, you know, I don't know.
And the dungeon is, and for those who don't know, the dungeon, again, was one of these legendary training places. If you ever get a chance to watch the, there's a documentary about Bret the Hitman Hart. And they talk about the neighbors listening to the screams from the basement of that home as the father was teaching these pro wrestlers, not to bring up, you know, sore subjects with some of the gentleman, he committed, what the hell was his name? Oh God, I can't think of his name right now.
Chris Benoit?
Was it Chris Benoit that killed himself and his wife?
That was Nancy. That was a woman that you were speaking about. That was
that wife. Was that who that was?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Well, she was first married to Kevin Sullivan because she managed him in the Florida territory first and then in WCW. And then she managed with the Four Horsemen, and then Benoit became a horseman, and then she was running, she was managing him. And that's a very unfortunate.
That's a real sad story, but that gets into, like I said, they talk about in the documentary, like Chris Benoit just screaming in the basement of the dungeon as Bret the Hitman Hart's father was just wearing them dudes out. He used to beat dudes like they owed him money. Yeah, and they said, and he was old back then.
And you just break and pressure point.
Oh yeah.
And I'll let you know, High Chief Peter Maivia was also a legitimate tough guy. We talked about him already. Ming Tonga, you know, yes. Or Haku, legitimate tough guy. You know, so that's what I mean is go back to your point where your uncle said, that guy's too big, whatever. Yeah, leave that guy alone. That's my point. If you see him in the bar, don't mess with him thinking that you're tougher. Because they'll remove your eyeball and show it to you, you know. You have a responsibility to protect the business when you're in the business. So when suckers like you start talking about what's real and what's fake, that's when Fox and I start tag teaming. Okay,
look at this. I lost my partner midway through the match. I went and became the heel and didn't even know it.
You're garbage. Can't be a fucking referee.
Oh, this is so great. But I see, I just grew up loving this stuff and enjoying it. And in the 90s, I will tell you, and I got to ask this question, and we're kind of hinting at it a little bit. When you start mentioning some of the guys we talked about, the training they went through, they were technically proficient. It was a lot of it was about the match itself and the matches that were going on. And yeah, you had the Piper's Pit, Rowdy Piper, the ultimate villain. Love Rowdy Piper. There's a documentary, for those who don't know it, that's coming up that I can't wait to watch that talks about Rowdy Piper and just the demons that were in that man. I can't wait to watch it. But they talk about like those guys back then. I feel like the match was more important than the promo. Whereas today, I think when I watch stuff with my kids, and I still watch it with my kids, a lot of that promo and that buildup has more value than the physical match. Do you see it the same way, or do you think they're just as proficient? What do you think, Fox?
It depends. Like, it's all in the psychology of what's going on. Like, if they're doing the promo and it's like, hey, you know, this Saturday I'm coming to take the championship against you, brother, blah, blah, blah. And then you go in, they wrestle, and it's whatever, whatever. But now if the promo was like, oh, like when Owen was like to Brett, I kicked your leg out from under your leg. He went after his leg. And then, like, they had the match. He went after his leg. He told the story, I'm going to take your legs out. Or like how Brett will work on someone's back. He's telling the story of, I'm damaging your back because my finisher attacks your back. So, like, it's all about the promo has to build to the match. You can have great promos, and then the match is just, like, for me, like, AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura had an awesome match in Japan, and then came to WWE and you're like, oh, he won the Royal Rumble. He's the heavyweight champion. They're going to meet in U.S. soil. It's going to be amazing, amazing, amazing. And then the promos, the buildup were like, yes, yes, yes. And then the match was like,
man.
Yeah. And you're like,
I think Fox is hitting on some salient points. When I hear the old timers speak about oftentimes is the value of ring psychology, and that exactly you have to make everything mean something. Why are you angry with that guy? Why are you fighting that guy? You keep trying to hit him with a punch, and the ref keeps interfering, saying no close fist, no close fist, no close fist. Doesn't let you do it. After 5 minutes, you finally punch the guy once. The crowd erupts, and it's one punch because there was psychology behind that. So, and the flip side is, you know, what's referred to as the flippity flip. You know, you got guys who are now too often doing finishing moves and somebody's kicking out of it. So you got a guy doing a 360, a 720 off the top rope. They give him a DDT used to knock someone out.
Yeah.
So these are the shifts and the changes. And then when you go back to the promo, it used to be they weren't giving Roddy Piper a script because Roddy Piper was so skilled at what he was doing. But in fairness, Roddy Piper was speaking at a time when maybe some of the things he might have been saying to Jimmy Snuka as he hit him with the coconut are not as racially sensitive today, but they could evaporate at that time and not right. be, you know, shared on YouTube and viewed by millions of people immediately and, you know, criticized in a different way. So it's a different era, and it's the difference between the now more scripted interviews, promos.
What do you mean script? Is he an actor? Hold on. I just got yelled at for using that term script. Wait a sec.
Yeah, they're using a script because I've starred in a few movies myself. If you want to know, I'll tell you another interview.
That's only on OnlyFans. Those aren't movies.
He's a big fan of mine.
You know, Sean, what you just did there, that was a heel turn by itself, man. That was Thank a you. Screw job. That was a
I try.
Know, that was a fast three count, I think. I can't believe
I do my best. Like, I have to tell you, folks.
We're going to need a lumberjack match if this is what's going
to
go on.
Oh, roll up. See, those were – oh, I used to – see, like, those kind of kitschy matches used to have such value. All the villains – or all the heels, all the heroes around the ring, the guys fight. It didn't matter who you were. You couldn't get out of the ring. You had to be they would push you back in. The lumberjack matches. I remember when the steel cage had like such value and it just kept going bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, what was the one? Wasn't there one that was like three stories and you had to climb through each story to get down to the bottom or some shit? Like, Those things are amazing. Mick Foley will always be the best steel cage match guy I have ever watched. Undertaker number two. Those guys in the cage were the best. And I've met a few wrestlers over the years. One of the great things I will say for WWE now that they do is any service member in uniform, you get free tickets to the match. And I went years ago in Reading, Pennsylvania, and I went to watch, and I was in uniform. I had brought a couple of my young Marines with me. We all went and sat up in the upper areas. They saw me in my dress blues because we were doing an event there, and they took me down ringside. Mm-hmm. And I jokingly say, there's not too many people that have ever intimidated me physically where I just looked at them and went, yeah, I'm not messing with you today. I can joke and laugh with a lot of people. I shook hands with Batista. That is a large piece of flesh. He shook my hand and his hand swallowed mine. And I just thought to myself, like, you're just a big sumbitch right now. I'm not messing with you. I'm not laughing. I'm not joking. How you doing, sir? Good to meet you. Have a nice day. Would you like my car keys? Like, I'll give you my car keys. Fuck it. Especially it's not a nice car.
Prime at 6'5", 320.
Oh, this was in 2009, 2010. So, you know, he was at his height. And I've seen, just so you guys know, like, I go all the way back to, like I said, WCW, Sting coming out of the rafters in the Baltimore Arena. as a kid, which, again, there's another great documentary. If you haven't seen it, watch the Ultimate Warrior documentary, folks. It's on Amazon Prime. I watched that the other day with my 11-year-old. I never knew that the Ultimate Warrior at one point in time was Sting's partner, that they grew up together, and that they were horrible wrestlers at first, and that they got brought in by some of the seasoned guys that were like, look, you got the look, you got the build for it. Let's teach you how to really use what you have, what skills you have.
Guys would get picked up. That's how the Big Show got picked up. Hogan was like, hey, you're a big dude. Come with me. He put him on. Gave his first match, he beat Hogan for heavyweight title. Ever.
Was
first
that? Match.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. That his first
match. He got the Undertaker in his movie, everything.
By the way, now, they were the Blade Runners when it was Sting, yes, and the Dingo Warrior. That's who the Ultimate Warrior was in Texas.
Yeah, because Vince was like, what's a dingo? That's why he's like, you can't have a Texas Warrior.
Let me tell you, that was a great time, too, because that's when you'd come home and ESPN would have WCCW live from Texas in the Sportatorium. It'd be on at like 3 or 4 in the afternoon. And so this is the mid to late 80s. And wrestling would be on at kind of awkward and different times on different channels as cable companies were trying to figure out their content. So in the Northeast, we did have, we had WWF, but Saturday nights at 6:05, that was on WTBS. I mean, you got to tune in and see the NWA, and it was totally different than what you were watching. So on Saturday, you'd watch Saturday morning, you'd watch WWF. Saturday night, you'd watch WTBS. And then Sunday morning, you'd watch more WWF, and then you'd come home during the week from school, and on TV would be WCCW coming out of Texas, and you'd see the Von Erichs and the Dingo Warrior and Cactus Jack Manson and Terry Funk. People think that what they have today. It was awesome in that era.
Oh, yeah, it was everywhere.
Even back in 03, 04, you would have TNA, NWA, yep, TNA, like Wednesday. And you have to, you watch it, and then it went to like $3 every Wednesday, like pay-per-view, you'd watch it.
And that's when like R-Truth was heavyweight champion. And like,
yeah. Well, that's a great point. ECW stuff. That ECW brought back the classic, and you mentioned it just now, Seth. NWA went to WCW. That's when you had it was a much more of a darker feel. And I feel like that's what ECW was. It was that darker feel. It wasn't so cartoony. It wasn't the flashy colors. And you had
smoke filled arena.
Oh, right. It was great.
You had the Road Warriors back then. You had the Killer Bees. Who else was back then? Like, folks, as you can hear, this is a bunch of guys either in their 40s or I'll just say that Fox is a historian.
I'm like in my 20s. I'm in my late teens.
We're reliving our this was part of our childhood. Because the other side to this that you don't hear us talking about is we would get done watching these things and then you would be like, let me put you in this. And you would find your friends, and you'd be like, he got right out of that camel clutch. Let me tell you from personal experience. If someone puts you in a camel clutch, you're done. That is not like, it's no big deal. That shit hurts.
The figure four is legitimate.
Figure four sucks.
Yeah, like I don't know, when they're and they are. It's sports entertainment. We joke around about, that the scripting and all of it, but the physicality of it is real. They're like watching two stunt people go through their activities, and you're watching it happen. You're watching the physicality. You're watching the brutality of someone getting picked up. When Hogan, one of my favorite is when Hogan slammed Andre. Andre jumped up for him to make it happen. He used to slam Big John Studd.
Did you say they were like stunt people, by the way? Because let me say, you have run your mouth so goddamn much. I meant it
in a good way.
If you think you're coming to our event in on August 28th, when I'm lining up a historic line of professional wrestlers, and I'm going to point to you and let everybody in the room know, this is the guy who thinks it's not real.
I didn't
this
say that.
This is the guy who thinks you're a bunch of stuntmen.
Hey, if you meant the stunt coordinator, Kevin Sullivan, I'm sure he would love.
What did I say? Hold on. So then, okay. We're going to
wrestlers, you piece of shit.
Seth's cutting a promo on me right now. So,
there's no promo. There's no promo. So, I invite you to show up, Sean. I'll be looking
I'm going to show up. But answer this question. So what's the right way to say it then?
Wrestler.
Here's the right way to say it. When you're in the business and you're around people who maybe know a little bit more, the rule is you shut your mouth and you listen.
But this is my show.
Oh, shit. All right. This is your show.
Wait
oh.
a sec. This is my show. I don't have all to right. shut up. I get paid. I don't get paid shit, but I get to do
hey,
this.
I believe in the First Amendment. You have the freedom of speech, but that's fine. That's fine. Be accountable for what you say. And I'm just going to point to,
so what's the right way to say
Henry,
it?
I'm going to point to Mark Henry, the U.S. Olympian, world's strongest yes. man. And I'm going to let him know what you had to say.
I'm gonna bring a grandmother with me to seduce him. Again, one of the greatest times ever in Mark Henry's career. When what the heck was her name?
May Young and Fabulous Moolah.
The Fabulous Moolah seduced Mark Henry. That was.
She gave birth to a hand.
Do what? Hold on. Yeah. What? Say that again, Fox. What?
You didn't know she gave birth to a hand on TV? Mark Henry's
hand? I didn't know that she gave birth to Mark Henry's hand. So legitimately then, Fox, Seth, when somebody's talking about the fact that it's sports entertainment and what they're doing, and to be in that respectful tone, which I thought I was, obviously, I'm learning right now. I was so far off.
Trash.
Talk a little shit and didn't even know it. I got called into talking shit and didn't know it.
I think it's, you know, how many of those drinks have you had over there? That's what it is. It's not you anymore.
Drunk man's words is a sober man's thoughts. Drunk man's words is a sober man's thoughts. Never mistake that. That's why so many drunk people get their ass whooped. But what's the right way of bringing it up to say to somebody? Like, obviously, I looking at somebody like using Fox, for example, I like Fox and look at him and be like, what you do is bullshit and it's fake. You're not going to do that.
I mean, it's a different era now in which the curtain has been pulled back, and there's a term that they use referred to as kayfabe that now is part of a actually regular vernacular. People use it in their vocabulary. But it wasn't that long ago when the business was protected from the outsiders, when it wasn't talked about, and when those words legitimately would have gotten somebody into trouble. And there was a responsibility for anyone in the business to protect the business. So you might remember going back to the 1980s, Dr. D. David Schultz actually got blackballed for quite a while because he slapped John Stossel because in an interview for 2020, John Stossel said, come on, isn't it fake? And Dr. D reminded him and let him know how fake it was. Yeah, and so go ahead and say
that. I forgot about that, dude.
See what happens.
But I get that. Like, and I remember Dr. D. Well, look, it goes no different. I watch a lot of the documentaries about these guys because I really do. Again, you know, they were part of my childhood. They were. You know, we went in the backyard and we tried to reproduce the moves they were doing. We were trying to redo what they were doing. You were deciding, well, which one of the junkyard – am I the junkyard dog or are we going to be British bulldogs today? You know, who are we in all this? You know, trying to figure out these things. You know, I even joke around and my kids if they were around when Cena used to be – when he first kind of came around – my kids are little. I pick them up on my shoulder and hold their leg and then drop them to the side and be like, you just got Murphy'd. You know, I have my own finishing move.
So, you know, that's why this, however, has the having the International Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame has all the potential to be extremely successful, because pro wrestling, it doesn't have a season like football or baseball or basketball does. It's seen on more televisions in more countries than any other professional sport. As Mike had spoken about earlier, it's one of the number one contributors to the gross domestic product. But Sean, as you're speaking about, it's a familial event, because I used to sit and watch it with multiple generations in a room at any time. And, you know, and you'd be surprised who are wrestling fans. It could be grandma who's a wrestling fan, or it could be, you know, the little nephew who's a huge wrestling fan. And lots of people try to act like they don't like it, but they do. They'll be like, oh yeah, I don't like it, but I do remember that one time, you know?
And they all tell you the same thing, that the current generation is bullshit to the prior generation, just like football. These guys couldn't play with the rules today. They're a bunch of blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean, I get it completely.
I don't know. Give me The Rock and Stone Cold and you know, D-Generation X and all of that.
D-Generation X. That was just,
you know, it was good. It was good TV.
Wait, one of the greatest nicknames ever, the 1-2-3 kid becomes 6. How is that not – how many people sat there going like, wait a sec, why is he called 6? Because before he was the 1-2-3 kid, so fuck it, he's 6 now.
And they were like, oh, he's the – actually the 6th member of the NWO. I was like,
No. See,
he's X-Pac.
Yeah, now,
and he's a Hall of Fame for both stables, so what do you do?
Well, he's got a video with China also. I mean,
it's Sean Waldman, yeah, he's a good guy. You know, give him his space. You know,
give him his space. Well, I mean, this is so amazing. I mean, folks, I will apologize right now. Like, look, folks, going across, I should have put my banners up. I forgot. We got so into this. We were cutting promos on each other, having a great time. Seth, this is a great one. Fox, you're always such a great co-host. Someday we'll figure out what's going on over there, though. I don't.
Well, I just want to say, look, we are a nonprofit. So now that you got the website going across, you know, the best way to support us is to buy t-shirts and sweatshirts. That's easy. Or come to our event. All of our events last year got canceled. And so that was a huge, a huge impact, which is, you know, why we don't have a building today. You know, we had got rid of 3 fundraisers, which would have been $50,000, which we need to go fund what we're doing, you know. So that's why now what we're doing is kind of recalibrating. And in August, we have our major event. It's a big 3-day event going on in Albany, New York, because that's where we're from, Capital District area kids, and want to keep everything in that area. It's at the Desmond Hotel. Starts Friday night with a live wrestling event. Then we got the After Hours party hosted by Bill Apter, who, of course, is, you know, the great author and photographer of all those great wrestling magazines from when we're kids. Saturday, we have a pro wrestling convention. So anybody wants to stop by, get autographs, get pictures, maybe buy something from the vendors that are there. So that's going on during the day. And we have panel discussions going on in the afternoon, where we'll be recording the history of professional wrestling and asking questions of real esteemed guests. And then Saturday night, major, that's our induction ceremony and with the awards, very classy event. And we follow up on Sunday morning with Breakfast of Champions. And so it's all a non-for-profit. So it's all, these are contributions that you can make. Go to the website, check it out. You find out lots of information about us. We are a certified non-for-profit, and it's all of it is volunteer work. No one makes a dollar off of it. So everybody who's doing this is volunteering, putting in crazy amounts of hours just to try to host events to get people, families, you know, come on out and have a great time and, do so in the name of professional wrestling and the history of professional wrestling from around the globe.
If somebody wanted to come out, do the whole 3 days, is there a 3-day package? Is the Desmond putting together a package? They can get rooms, anything like that?
Yeah, great question. So right now they would have to, we have the VIP packages available because what our dinner is actually sold out based on the current CDC regulations and Department of Health regulations. I do suspect they're going to change pretty quickly, though. So we're maxed out for our dinner, but we hope that we could actually sell more of those. If we can do that, we can open it up. Otherwise, we're just selling VIP packages, or you can go. You can get the live wrestling event as a standalone, or $25 to go to the convention as a standalone. That's something people can do by going to the website. You'll find the information there. But if you want to go to the dinner and the panel discussion, those are maxed out at this point.
Maxed out right now.
Maxed out under current regulations. And we are going to, you know, we're professionals, so we're going to make sure everyone is safe. You know, we can't risk our insurance, right, our own livelihoods. I'm not going to violate the rules, you know.
And I've got a really good camera here if we can work this out and I don't get a promo cut on my ass and get slammed through a table or dropped off of a cage or something like that. You know, choke slammed through the floor, you know, figure four, DDT'd.
No, you know, we got a little something special for you. We got a little.
Is that a real? Is that real?
Is that really autographed? I guess it is. Huh?
Get the fuck out of here.
It's actually a worn.
That's so cool. But and as I said, you've got, you know, the hands of stone, rugged Ronnie Garvin, who, look, folks, go look up Ronnie Garvin. Ronnie Garvin was amazing to me. My man would just – he would hit you with a straight one piece and drop your ass and then just be done with it. There was no kicking out of that. There was no getting away from that. He was
the NWA champion at a time when that NWA belt meant something.
Right. You know,
He still does. You know, I don't want to take anything away from Nick Aldis, who holds it to this day, Mickey James' husband, but Nick Aldis has the current NWA champ. But back in the – early 1980s.
You know what I had to explain to some. I don't mean it because we can keep going. You know what I had to explain to somebody the other day that they just blew their mind was who Goldust was. I'm like, you know who Goldust is, and they're like, "Did you tell them about the wrestler?" I'm like, "Yeah, Dustin Rhodes." They're like, "Who? You don't know that? You don't know?" And they're like, "I explained the whole thing." And they just – it blew their mind that, like, who he was. I'm like, that's who that is. That's Dusty Rhodes' son, Dustin Rhodes, who looked like his father when he first came out, and then he got in his own thing. That's another one that Dusty Rhodes, that guy used to – he mastered the bleed. There was nobody better at the bleed than that guy. I don't know how he did it.
Dusty Rhodes, he's great. How about his promos? Go back and watch his Hard Times promo and just put it on repeat and keep listening to it. There's, you know, the guy's unbelievable.
Oh, he was amazing. Fox, did you practice anybody's promos to get better at it?
No.
There is an audio medium to this, Fox. You gotta talk.
Well, I'm waiting for you guys to shut the fuck up. No, I never really studied. I mean, besides like wrestling in the backyard with my peeps saying, like, you know, yo, you smell the Rock cooking, the Rock says this and all that, but I don't know anyone's promo word. The closest one is like when the Rock asked Hogan, like, you talk about headlining WrestleMania after WrestleMania, how about headlining WrestleMania with the Rock? But then there's the Hogan one. We talked about Paul Orndorff getting a new paint job. They're the only two that I've like.
Oh, Paul Orndorff.
This is like this because like Hogan's talking to Orndorff about like because they're from Tampa and they're Florida boys going at it. And he's like, oh, we used to be best buds, you know. And then it's like, oh, the old Mr. Wonderful's back. Like, you got a new paint job. And like, I love how Hogan's intensity and shit in that. I watched that promo over and over. That's the only one. But I wouldn't practice that in the mirror, like, you know, the paint. But I would just say shit and then, because it's all real.
Love it. Gentlemen, this was an amazing show. Love it. Folks, again, the weekend of August 28th, take your time. Come out here to the Capital District.
If come you see me.
Come see Fox. He's in the Battle Royal. Winning. Come see some legends, some true legends. In the profession of wrestling, guys that as kids we all looked up to as bigger than life,
I'll do again, it in my Dusty Rhodes impression. I'll run. Let me tell you something about being there, because it's going to be the hands of stone, Ronnie Garvin. Let me tell you something about the Taskmaster, Kevin Sullivan, and J.J. Dillon, manager of the Four Horsemen. Let me tell you about the Ascension with Connor and Victor and the Rock and Roll Express. Let me tell you something, Daddy, right there, live in public, if you will, in Albany, New York, at the Desmond Hotel, August 28th. Come and see Tony Atlas. Come and see Mark Henry, World's Strongest Man. Be there.
That is a, phenomenal Dusty Rhodes impression. Love it. Gentlemen.
Dusty himself gave me permission to do a Dusty Rhodes impression. I mean, that's a true story, but for another time. Another time.
Seth, I feel like we could probably go on for another hour and a half. You've got phenomenal stories about all these folks that you've met. It is impressive, all the different folks that you've met, all the different people that you've worked with. Fox, it's impressive that you know me. That's the most important thing for you, is that you know me, and I've gotten you this far. Just so you know that. Don't make faces, Foxy.
Got me as far as my living room / kitchen.
Well, that's important. You know, look at that.
You got Fox in the Royal Rumble. You better be there. Water Elite Dome. August
Water 27th. Water Elite Dome.
Part of on Scott the 27th. Wilder Promotions, putting it on as a fundraiser for the International Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame.
This is phenomenal. Folks, if you're enjoying what you're seeing here, our Instagram is at the Above the Bar Podcast. Our Twitter, Above the Bar 4. Our email, theabovethebarpodcast@gmail.com. If you need any information, I will be more than happy to direct you over to the International Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame. Folks, this was phenomenal show. Jeanette Superfan says, this was a fun night tonight, and Fox actually got to talk. Fox, Fox, you might want to be careful. Jeanette might come having to come find you. You know, she might have her sassy pants on and come find you. I know right now she's blushing. Jeanette is our international fan. She is, as I always say, she has lived in Papua New Guinea. How great is it to say that you lived in Papua New Guinea? I know nothing about the place, but the fact that you can say, I lived in Papua New Guinea, how amazing is that? I don't even know what it means either. Seth, now remember, gentlemen, we're going to the green room here in a moment. Seth, or Fox, what is your final words?
Like my stuff, follow me, come meet me at June 5th up at some place at ReverbaCon. All my information is on my wall, on my Instagram, Twitter, all that. Just look at the Fox Vineyard, Google, follow, love, like, subscribe. Buy shit too.
Maybe
wrestle at the Royal Rumble or at the Rumble in Waterfleet, 4 blocks from my stomping ground of a house that I sleep with my 2 cats, and watch me beat every single legend in that ring again.
Love it.
Listen,
my money's on Fox.
Who you are, what you know, your stupid trophy. I have a trophy too. I'm a tag team champion somewhere. I didn't make it myself.
I'm a tag team champion somewhere.
Sean, you invite me onto a podcast. You say that we're going to do an interview. You bring along this jabroni, Fox. You know, everything was going fine, and he had to bring up, you know, all his old stomping grounds. And, you know, I don't need to go.
Lee Garnett and Gray, brother.
Oh, I love it.
I'm insulted. I'm insulted. I'm never, you know, I don't know that if you invited me, whether I'd be coming back. I'd rather go to Papua New Guinea right now. You know, small island. You know, in the archipelagos. You know, who the hell knows?
Oh, now they got a smart teacher on us.
I don't. I might have probably said that wrong. She'll correct me. I do have a. We'll leave Papua New Guinea alone right now.
Look,
they didn't do nothing to us.
Papua New Guinea didn't do anything else. And for our international fans, before I give Seth the last word, for whoever is in Germany, Great Britain, and Netherlands that listened to our show here recently, I used to be big in Kenya. I don't know what happened. Please come back. I love all my international guests. Please make sure that you like and subscribe to the show. Always makes me happy to see everybody. I love my Jeanette. Jeanette's giving you a good laugh there. Jeanette's one of my favorites. Seth, so if you get the final word there, brother.
Well, thank you, Sean, honestly, for having us on tonight. Sorry, Mike dropped out. You know, he couldn't carry the ball, but that's why I'm president. He's vice president. listen, we got so many volunteers. I didn't run through their names. I wish I could on our board of directors and our ballot committee. But please, folks, if you have any interest in professional wrestling and in the history of professional wrestling, what we're trying to do is make sure these items are preserved, because otherwise they evaporate. They end up in private collections. They disappear. They get thrown away. They get stolen. So we're trying to, you know, make sure that the general public has an opportunity to see these for years to come. So that's really what our goal is. And it is international in scope. And so please check us out at prowrestlinghall.org. It'd be great if you can come to the events. But check it out. Get a T-shirt, get a sweatshirt, show up in August, and we'll have a great time.
Gentlemen, I appreciate it. Make sure you remember, because I always have to remind folks, we're going to the green room. All righty, folks, be sure to push your stool in.
This has been an Earplug Podcast presentation. Found on earplugpodcast.com, iTunes, SoundCloud, and wherever your favorite podcasts are found.